Well, thank you for the invitation. And first of all, I like to pay respect to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha for being a Buddhist. This is Buddhist meditation, and I like to pay respect. Just it is half a minute. If you know the words, this is just Namo Tassa. And if you know the words, join me. Otherwise, you can just hold your hands together. Otherwise, you don't have to do anything. That's free. And so I just say Namo Tassa, that's all. This is paying respect to Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, paying gratitude, being the teacher who gave us all this, which is Buddha. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhan Dhamman Sangham Namassami. Now that, just to explain that, this is Buddha is the teacher, the Lord Buddha, and the Dhamma is the teaching that he gave, and the Sangha is his disciples, the ordained monks and nuns. So we pay respect. Every time before I sit down to meditate, I pay respect. That helps me calm my mind. I'll come to that. Before that, are there any beginners to meditation? Ah, that's good. Okay, all are experienced meditators. So, and I could see from the faces, smiles are there. I can see Ajahn Brahm has trained you well. I said, have the smile. And as I said, as Sarah mentioned that, born to a Buddhist family, born in a Buddhist country, born in a village where the temple is the most ancient temple in that whole province. 1600-year-old temple, and that has been raised down by, I'm just giving a little bit of, by Portuguese around 1550, but it has been rebuilt. You won't believe, the British, I'm sorry, we blame them for various things, but they gave a huge cash grant. The British government then, colonial government gave a cash grant. I think it's a very big sum around that time, probably 30,000, which is maybe about 30 million now, in 1890-odd. How I know is my grandfather's grandfather has been part of that group which rebuilt. So, but having been in such a place, I had to come to Perth and meet these Western monks, Ajahn Jagaro and Ajahn Brahm, to know about meditation. That's how I started meditating. So thanks to Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Jagaro initially. Those who don't know Ajahn Jagaro, he was the abbot of Bodhinyana, very first abbot. He's not a monk anymore, various reasons. But so that's how I started meditating. And Ajahn Brahm, I'm trained by Ajahn Brahm, so I'm a, you will hear, you know, repetitions, so bear with me if you do. And one word for Buddha's teaching is kindness. If anyone asks, how would you summarize Buddhism in just in one word? Actually, it's happiness. Happiness through kindness. That is Buddhism. So Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. Most of you may know. I'm not going to go into all that. But it's how to end the suffering. We are all suffering in one way or the other. And Buddha said this whole thing, this whole existence, whole human existence, whole beings, we are suffering. And he found the path to the end of suffering. What is end of suffering? It's happiness. So Buddha showed the path how to be happy. And that path is called the Noble Eightfold Path. And essential element of that path is meditation. So that's what we are going to talk about. That's what we are going to do. That's what we are going to discuss. And so before I go any further, I just want to find out, because you are all experienced meditators, Is there any burning question in your mind that you would like to raise? Don't worry. And I want to tell you, in a very important sutta, various places, Buddha has given kamma. Kamma is the action. Even some monks pronounce this word wrong, unfortunately. They say kamma. Kamma is the sensual gratification. Kamma, K-A-M-M-A, is the action. And in a sutta that described as in the Majjhima Nikaya, it's one of the collections of scriptures, Buddha says, one person goes and asks, Bhante, how do you these some people are tall, some people short, some people handsome, some people ugly, some people foolish, some people intelligent. Why? How does this happen? So he gives a very nice discourse. And he says, those who are intelligent are those who have raised the questions in their last life. So if you want to be intelligent next life, this is the opportunity. Right? Ask the question, if there is any. If you don't have anything, don't worry. We can continue. But if there is anything, any question, I can start from there. Think about it. I'll give you a couple of seconds. Oh, sorry, I forgot about the Metta Sutta. I'm very sorry. And let's do that. And I was, oh, sorry about that. I haven't come here for a little while. Okay. Let's chant Metta Sutta. And I will let the group lead with it.
Yeah. You can start, we can
okay.
You.
This is how I do it.
What should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace? Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Sorry.
Thank you.
All right. But we will do it. And also, we paid respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. I also must say how well this group is being run. I understand from 1987. We came here in 91 for at least for half a year at that time, long time ago. And it's doing a great service. So I know Rachel and Sarah and Marlene and Doug before you, I think. And Bob, sorry, I forget all the names. And I know, is that David?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think, yeah,
Doug
I remember you.
Doug Anderson, he still comes.
Still comes?
Yep. Yeah.
He's all good now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I met him some time ago at the monastery. Mm-hmm. So it's a great service and free service, voluntary service for the benefit of everyone else. So I pay my respect to you all too for all the great work that you are doing. So I'm sorry, I know a few others, and but I have forgotten all the names, and bear with me for not mentioning the names. Now, meditation. I think I said happiness. Buddha pays attention. Buddha says in number of suttas, always it is number one. You know about this, how the scriptures are arranged. If you are not, I think it's a good thing to get someone to talk about it. And in the what is called the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the numerical collection of scriptures, very first one in the very first book is about the mind. Buddha says that he doesn't know any other one item, one thing that can bring harm if not developed. That is the mind. And he also says that he doesn't know any one item that if you properly develop, that will bring a lot of benefits. One item. And it is in that scripture and on the Dhammapada. Dhammapada is a collection of about 322 verses. Very nice book. Very first one is about the mind. And Buddha says that in Pali it says, Manopubbangamadhamma. That means mind is the forerunner to everything. Mind dictates everything. Mind determines everything, and the volition and the actions all come thereafter. So this mind is the thing that we have to develop if we have to gain our happiness. And the way to, let's look at it, the we are consisting of our body and the mind. We pay a lot of attention to the body, but not very much to the mind. The mind is left alone. The meditation is the teaching to make sure that we look after the mind. Just like a car, if you only look after the body and not the engine that propels the body, you are not going to go from here to even Serpentine. You will be stuck. So that's the way the Buddha says, develop mind, develop the mind. So he gave this technique called meditation. Buddha has given number of ways of practicing meditation, some 40 odd, breath meditation, loving kindness meditation, which we just now chanted, and walking meditation, various recollection, one's own generosity, because this meditation is established through one's own generosity. I said kindness, kindness to oneself and kindness to others. So by recollecting your own generous acts, your own ethical practices, your own virtue, you can make yourself happy. You will be happier, you will be recalling your own good deeds, and then the mind will get gladdened. And the meditation happens. Automatic. Ajahn Brahm says, driverless bus. There is no one to drive here, so it's the bus automatically takes off. But it's the very first beginning is the ethical practice or the virtue. It's the virtue that propels you into this path of meditation. So how do you become ethical? It's the next stage. Buddha gives that as well an answer, a very simple answer. He says the Anyone has heard great Arahant Venerable Ananda? My same name, I'm named after that great Arahant. He went to the Buddha and asked, Bhante, I think this good friendship is 50% of this whole Buddhist teaching. Buddha says, Ananda, no, it's wrong. It's not 50%, it is 100%. Good friendship, good companionship, good association is the one that takes you further. So, to be ethical, you have to be among good friends. And if you associate wrong types of friends, there are a number of examples in today's world from Buddha scriptures how people have fallen into disrepute simply by being in association with the wrong type. We know that. So this is, Buddha says, how to select the, unfortunately we are limited by time, it's already 7:20, and I think this is important before I get to how to, I think I can guide through the meditation later on, but this, how to select the good friends. Four things, he says. Buddha gives the word in Pali called Sapurisa, that is means superior person. How to, the four qualities of a superior person. He says that person will have what is called the Sadda, which is the confidence or the inspiring inspiration. Inspiration in whom? Not in Michael Jackson, right? Not in any cricketer or anyone, but because this is the teaching. Buddha, Dhamma, his teaching, and the Sangha, his disciples. Those who have faith is not just blind faith, it's the experiential confidence in the Buddha as the teacher, in the Dhamma as the teaching, and the Sangha as his ordained disciples. Number one, confidence. Number two, virtue. They will be virtuous people. We all know what virtue is. Ethical practice, ethical behavior, ethical living. And Buddha in this one gives one word to summarize all that. He says in Pali, appamada, which means diligence. Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is one of the greatest Western monks in America, who has done a lot of translations, summarized, gives this word as the diligence, and he says this is the unremitting desire or unremitting devotion to be good and do good. That is the diligence in Buddhism. So those who are diligent with faith and then sila, ethical practice, that's a two, ethical confidence. Third one is chaga in Pali, that is generosity. They are generous, they are prepared to give what they have. And then the fourth one is panya, which is wisdom. So he says those who have the faith, virtuous, generous, and wisdom. Possessing of these four qualities, they are the friends that you are better to associate with. Sometimes you can't always, when we are working, when we live in the society, you can't set aside, you can't push aside someone who is not, but get the good qualities of those and then associating them to that extent. So rather than going to the pub, you are here at Armadale Meditation Group, as Ajahn Brahm says, Club Med, isn't it? Club Med, Ajahn Brahm says. We have been here, so we know that. And you are here. So that is the good friendship. Friendship with people who run this place. I know Catherine has given about 3 talks here, associating such good people. Rachel has been brainwashing you, I think. And Ajahn Brahm has been brainwashing you. So associating such good people put you in a sound footing. And in Pali, it's very clear that what it means. You have to be established in sila. And sila means the ethics, virtue. Got to be. So Once you are established in ethics, the rest falls into place. And ethical practices, what do you mean by ethics and generosity? I know people do these generous acts in various ways. You can start at your own family level. You know, sometimes some people don't even wash their cups. Not anyone here. So to begin with, washing your own cup is for your partner, you know, whoever it is. It's a help. That's being generous, starting there. And then helping at home, helping your relatives, being generous, helping the... There are a lot of poor people in this world. Helping in the... I know a person who goes to the local op shop. That's about 2 hours a day for 2 days a week. Difficult, not young anymore, but still doing it. And helping sponsor children in various ways. Helping. So that helps. They say that these number of such people, they say that helps. When you sit down to meditate, those good feelings come back to you. You know they are helping your mind because you are not greedy. You are not holding on to yourself. Buddha says generosity is giving what is difficult to give. It's the ultimate in generous act. So if you can start with what you can easily give and then help others, this is generosity, because giving your time to help others. And one of the biggest, best givings, Buddha says, that to give to those who are practicing the path, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, who are following the teachings. At the moment in Jhana Grove, because which is what is called the Rains Retreat, as you know, there are about 30 people who are practicing meditation. Two of them are there at the moment. We are not doing the whole 3 months. We are picking about 10 days in each month, being other commitments. So we are there at the moment. There are 5 young men from Europe. Young men, they are not old people like me. They have given up their leave. One is working for the Air Force in Italy. He's from Italy. And they have given up. So supporting them is one of the most generous acts. At the moment, at the monastery, there are 25 monks, about another 10 people staying at the monastery. That's 30 from Jhana Grove. About 65 people come to the monastery for lunch. We are all fed by, all these 65 people are being fed by people who bring food to the monastery for lunch. So there are some people who come every week. That's a very generous act. They prepare food at least for 20 to 30 people. So every week, once a week, every day. So that is a generous act. And by doing this sort of acts, you gladden your mind, you make yourself happy, and then your meditation takes off. You don't need any other push. And that is the secret, if you like, for a successful meditation. And whatever that you could do, due to various reasons, we are restrained, aren't we? We have our other various commitments, obligations, so we can't be helping every time. And we can't be supporting a lot of people, but supporting your own family members, supporting in your local group, supporting within the environment is good enough. Whatever that you are doing is good enough. Because you are here, that's being generous to yourself, that is good enough. Whatever you are doing is good enough. I think that is the has to be the mantra. What I am doing is good enough. That is what I can offer. That is the has to be the mantra. I used the word this mantra that came from, there is a monk, I think those who have come here knows, Ajahn Khemavaru. We have done all his 5-day retreats. Unfortunately, this year he didn't come for the 5-day retreat at Jhana Grove. Not this year. So he says, if you feel agitated while sitting down to meditate, just say to yourself, nothing to do, nowhere to go. So I am sitting here. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. If you have nothing to do, if you have nowhere to go, what else to do? Sit here and meditate. So that's 7:30. Therefore, I think I plan to say a little things, but I think we'll stop at that. And Metta Sutta, I just wanted to hear a few little things, but if there is time, we will come back to that at the end. Is that okay, Mali? Yeah? Okay. And then we'll do it that way. Now, so any questions on what is said? Happy to take on questions anytime. I'm saying this is habit because after I stopped working, took an early retirement, I got some teaching at Curtin as a part-time lecturer. So I always offered to them, stop me and ask questions. So that worked. That worked. So if you have any questions anytime, you are free to stop me, but not during the meditation. other times. And if you want to go to the toilet for a minute or stand up or feel free, we'll take a couple of minutes. And you're all used to the meditation, so I don't have to give the drill as such. And it will be the same. You are used to Ajahn Brahm, follower of Ajahn Brahm, I am, so it will be the same drill, no change. And surprising, I was telling Marlene, I thought I may have to have some water, but I was having a cough and cold, and also haven't talked at Jhana Grove, but the words are coming through, and the cough has disappeared. I think the power of meditation, when you think of meditation, I think it goes away. Alright, so what I'll do is, I think so that is for the end, and we will I mentioned number of types of meditation. Buddha used what is called the breath meditation, in Pali Anapanasati. Sati is the mindfulness. And that is the meditation that he used to break through. That's the breakthrough, finding the truth. He found that breakthrough. You can become emotional when you talk about that, because he just broke through, found the truth, found the reality, and for our own benefit. And he's the greatest human being. This number of years was given by Ajahn Brahmali at one stage. Greatest human beings to walk on this earth for 35 billion years. That's the gap between two Buddhas. Ajahn Brahmali worked out that, I think, this gap. So we'll start with mindfulness on breath. But before that, Buddha also recommended, there are scriptures on its own, the mindfulness of the body. I started practicing mindfulness on the body after reading a scripture on that. It's a fairly middle-sized scripture from what is called the Middle-Length Discourses or the Majjhima Nikaya. If anyone wants to refer it, it's number 119 on Majjhima Nikaya. It's called Mindfulness of Body. It's a Bhikkhu Bodhi translation, if you can find, read it if you could. And we will start with that. You know that as body scan. So we'll start with that. And also, before we start, I will just give a little bit on that Ajahn Brahm's book, Emperor's Three Questions. Anyone who knows about Emperor's Three Questions? It's in that book. Ajahn Brahm says, what very quickly, it's a nice story, but I will get to the three questions. The three questions are, I just came to my right now. I just mentioned coffee came. So you think about it, it comes. And then an emperor asked a wise man, what is the most important time? Second question is, Who or what is the most important person or the thing? And what is the most important thing to do? Those are the three questions. And Ajahn Brahm, maybe he hasn't said, talked about this for some time, so, and that's why I think I'm getting no reactions from some faces. But anyway, that's all right. I have the answers. It just came to me. And this emperor said, the wise man said, the most important time is now. Buddha also said that in various scriptures, present moment awareness. That's how Ajahn Brahm teaches. Present moment awareness. Don't go back to the past. It's dead past. Whatever we did, whatever we achieved, however what I progressed, all gone. All what I did as a young man, all gone. I'm a general, an old man now. So it's gone, past is gone. It's only the present. The future is unborn. Why worry? It's not born yet. It's only the present moment. So we sit here with whatever that comes. Second question is, who or what is the most important? What you are in front with. To me, you are the most important. And what I am getting now, what I am saying, what I am talking, is the important thing, nothing else. If someone comes and tries to get my attention, if I go to that side, then I am not practicing that second answer. So, what is the most important thing to do? Answer is to care. To care for the present moment, to care for what is in front of you. So when we meditate, we try to remember that now is the most important thing. We are not going to go back past, we are not going to think of the future, we will be thinking, not thinking, wrong word, we will be in the present moment. Just be aware, just to know, not to do, but to know. So Ajahn Brahm says, driverless bus. So we could, our five senses are bothering us all the time. The mind is restless because the five senses are attraction, what is called the sensual stimulus. We are getting disturbed. So therefore, let's start by closing our eyes. So we'll close our eyes now, and then we pay attention to our posture. Wherever you are sitting, better off if you are used to it. I'm used. Thank you very much, Catherine. So we pay our attention to begin with to the posture. Where am I sitting? How am I sitting? How am I sitting? And pay your attention, full attention to the posture. be thankful that this body has been helping you. You, who is this you? That's your mind. Mind is the forerunner to everything. Mind dictates. Mind helps you. This body has been helping the mind. All these years, for 72 years, it has been helping. And for long that time, be that is your friend. So we'll start acclimatizing for a couple of, maybe a minute. Just think of the body from the head to the foot, bottom of the foot. Just scan it, a quick scan, and see whether there are any aches or pains or any niggles or anything like that, and just be kindful to that spot. So we'll start from the body scan from the buttocks, in my case, that is the feeling, sensation, my buttocks are touching the chair, more than the bottom of the feet, I feel that. So I will start from that. Normally I start from the feet, but normally I sit on a cushion, but so we'll start from the right buttocks, underneath, bottom of the thigh muscle, we go down. Feel it, feel the sensation, and be aware of it. Same thing for the left, bottom of the thigh muscle, feel it up to the knee, and then top of the thigh muscle. Feel the same way, keep going down. Left of the thigh muscle, keep going down to the knee, feel the knees, right knee, left knee, then from there, right leg, calf muscle, from the knee to the bottom, feel it, feel the sensation, left calf muscle, feel the sensation. Now to the right shin bone and around it, feel that left shin bone, feel the sensation. Then the heel and the bottom of the right foot, left foot, heel and the bottom, and then right toes and the top part of the right foot, then the left toes and the top part of the left foot. These have been taking care of you, taking from place to place, walking from place to place. So be very grateful to these two legs, and they are body parts, they are not you, they are just made up of skin, bones, muscles, ligaments, synovial fluids. These are from the scriptures. They are just body parts, they are conditioned things, they have arisen due to conditions. So it's not, you have no control over any of this. So therefore, no point in hanging on to them. They are not yours. Just leave it. Leave it where they are. now you have left them. We come back to the buttocks. We come up on the back and come up on the back. Feel the back along from the bottom to the top. Feel the sensations. Feel the any aches or pains. Pay attention. Be kind to that. Send metta to that spot and then say, may that spot be happy and peaceful. And we move on to the, sorry, I'm cutting short, this along the neck from the bottom through the ears, we go to the head and feel the head. If there are any discomfort, pay attention and that will look after itself. Leave it because it is not mine. This, any part of this body I have no control. From the head, forehead, eyebrows, eyes, nose, nostrils, mouth, teeth. Feel the muscles on the face, especially keep a smile on your lips. That will make you happy, calm the body, and then it will help calm the mind. So smile, and then if there is any stress on the shoulders, feel it, and then leave it. Feel it and leave it. Nothing we could do. It's not mine. This body is not mine. So, go down along the neck, chest area, upper chest area, lungs, heart, inside, diaphragm, small intestine, they are all inside, and stomach, contents of the stomach, spleen, mesentery, liver, bile, not yours. Body is not yours. Hands, fingers, feel the fingers. Normally you would be keeping your fingers, perhaps one hand on the other or wherever they are. Just feel them. Feel the sensation. Feel the sensation and just leave it again. Now if you feel the body is calm, if the breath arises, go to the breath, follow the breath. In breath, you don't have to feel it touching anywhere. You can establish your mindfulness either around the nose area or on the chest, wherever you feel the sensation of the in-breath. So feel it, then you will feel that in-breath coming in and then going out. Don't worry about knowing the beginning, middle and the end. Don't worry. Just know the in-breath and just know the out-breath. Am I breathing in or am I breathing out? That's all. If thoughts come, don't worry about them. They are just passing clouds. You're not going to hang on to them. They're not yours. You have no control over them. Don't worry about them. if there are any disturbances, thoughts or anything, just think of your good virtues, your preparation to come here. You have taken trouble to prepare for this meditation. You are here now, so make use it to the fullest. Your positives, your virtues, just think of that, whatever little help, whatever big help that you have done today, yesterday, that is, if there are any disturbances. Otherwise, stay with the breath, which is your friend. Ajahn Brahm says, welcome it as a friend. We are getting closer to the end of meditation. Just look back and see how it progressed. I will ring the bell, and at the end of the third bell you can come out. But for now, please review, taking a review as to how did it go, what came right, what wasn't right from your point of view. It may be right, but see whether you can get the reasons, whether it was good, bad, who knows. And take half a minute for that, please. Especially note what came right as to what you think. Then you can repeat it if possible. Nothing is permanent. You cannot replicate the meditation session. But just think of what came right. That's the end of the meditation. I thought I might beat the announcement, but the bell before the announcement. But how do you feel? And just take a minute or two just to get your bearings. Right? Have a sip of water. Give a cough. I can remember some familiar faces. We used to sit together. Or 3 years ago, we stopped coming because we felt we are taking the seats from the beginners. So, one day we came, and I remember Bob had to sit outside or Bob had to wait outside because too many people. I remember that day, and Bob, and so now it's a great thing that is happening here at Tamadale Meditation Group. And so, take a minute or two. Frame many questions. I told you, we all, I don't, some may believe in rebirth, some may not get there, but some may not be, some may be doubtful, some may be thinking, but if there is something called rebirth, if, let's assume if there is something called rebirth, would you like to be a born as a foolish person or an intelligent person? You have a choice. So any question, nothing called a silly question. They are all useful questions. Could be to you, could be to someone else. So raise it if you have any doubts. Any sort of doubt. We can, I'm happy to, I may not know the answers to everything, but at least I can note it, look at it, and I can send the answer to Marlene. So if I know the, then you can share it. And if I know the answers, we can discuss. Any questions before we get to the next part? Feel free. Thanks.
I was interested in the body scan at the very beginning that you did, and the reminder of the different parts, and they're just parts, and they're not self. And you mentioned the sutta 119. I was wondering if in that sutta it actually connects the practice of the body scan with the recollection of the parts.
Of course, yes. Yeah. Thank you for that question, Catherine. And that's a very important, every sutta is very important, but this sutta I must have read 3 or 4 times recently. When I say recently, I started doing this in full about 2 years ago, and it connects. It has 31 body parts. Buddha describes the all these. I went and the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation and Bhante Sujato's translation has nice simple words for all those Pali words, and it lists 31 body parts. If I had time, I would have gone through. I remember now all of them, and I would have gone through all of them. And Buddha says that this body, there is no essence in it, Catherine, as you know. There is no self. These are just conditionally arisen parts. It looks like one entity, but they are just parts. Will you have, if it is an essence, if I am a self, or if there is a one strong entity here, if that is me, I should have control over everything. In an organization, you say he is the boss. He thinks he is controlling everything. At least he thinks, doesn't he? So that is why he is called the boss. At least, you know, in the conventional way. But have you seen any boss who has had overall ultimate control? Most recent, I was with the mining sector and then went over to the local government sector. And City of Perth recently, chief executive officer, he has had to go on a stress leave. He's supposed to have all the controls in the local government council. None at all. So is ourselves. This body is in that, it's called Catherine Kayagata Sati Sutta, mindfulness of body, Majjhima Nikaya 119. There are three suttas, they are connected to each other. 118 is mindfulness of breathing. 119 this one. 120 is a very nice sutta if you can get someone to read it. Called rebirth by design. You can plan your own rebirth. Buddha gives a nice blueprint. I'm not going to go there now. But those three suttas, and this in this sutta is a scripture. Sutta is a scripture, Pali word. And in that scripture, Buddha gives a nice discourse. Everything is nice, but how to? So that is it. It does give. Thank you for the question. And any other questions? If not, what we might do is, I might talk a little bit about walking meditation. Very rarely taught, rarely discussed, sparingly practiced. Even those who know rarely practice it, and but it has benefited me. So when Marlene asked me what are the topics, I thought only for a few hours, couple of hours that day itself, I replied to you. I said mindfulness of breathing and walking meditation. So we'll talk about the walking meditation for a little bit, and I'll give a demonstration, minute or so. And it's one of the meditation practices that Buddha highly recommended. Reason is, he gives five benefits. There are not many suttas as well. I have seen two suttas. By the way, my life is mostly on reading suttas for the last 4 to 5 years, maybe longer, about 7 years. I'll tell you how I got to that. I think I'm from Buddhist country. I thought I knew everything. You know, coming from a Buddhist country. Ajahn Sujato, Bhante Sujato, had a weekend retreat about 7 or 8 years ago at Janagrove. So he was, it's a weekend retreat. Everyone knows Bhante Sujato here. And so he's a Perth boy, Perth man. And I asked him, if you know the five precepts and, you know, pay respect to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and you know the Noble Eightfold Path, do you have to read suttas? And I was sitting right at the back of the wall, but now I sit right in the front, I go straight. So, and then he said, Ananda, read the suttas. That will get you very close to the Buddha and his teachings. So I went home. And he said, start with Majjhima Nikaya if you could. The one that Catherine knows, the middle length discourses. It will be nice to talk about how these things are grouped. you know, it's fantastic grouping 2600 years ago. These great monks grouped them. I started learning accounting, studying. I studied for UK accounting exams in late 60s, very early 70s. And I came across what is called this chart of accounts. I thought, what a marvelous thing this is. This is so nicely arranged, the chart of accounts. You can introduce anything, you know. Yes. And then 10 years ago, mind-boggling this, how these great monks have arranged these, all these sutras. About 14,500 are arranged in five groupings. My goodness, you can go to anything when you follow. Bhante Sujato has done a fantastic job called Sutta Central, and you can very easily go to that and read these sutras. So easily accessible. And he has done a wonderful job for the benefit of so many people. He was away, you know, as you know, for 2 years in a small lonely island alone by itself, and simplified all the English translations. We are very grateful to Bhante Sujato. SuttaCentral.net if you want to go there. And also there is a nice book. My daughter gave me this book, who is now at Dhammasara these days, and about probably 20 years ago, called The Great Disciples of the Buddha. And that book brings you, it's not a sutta, it's like when you read it, you feel you are living there. So nicely written and edited by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And it's written by a German monk who lived in Sri Lanka and together with another German Buddhist, and translated and edited by Bhikkhu Bodhi, The Great Disciples of the Buddha. So that's about the, I got there because of the question. That's great, thank you. So we'll get to the walking meditation part. Walking meditation, because Buddha lived 2600 years ago, no motor vehicles, probably few carts, bullock driven carts or horse driven carts, but nowhere in the scriptures it says Buddha has gone from one place to the other in a cart or in some chariot. Always walked in those dusty roads. In Indian, those who have gone on pilgrimage would see how difficult conditions even now. Imagine 2600 years ago, may have been better environment, but still he walked. So he gave the walking meditation to prepare people for long journeys. That is one of the benefits Buddha attributes, five benefits on walking meditation. One is it prepares you for long journeys. Second one, it helps you digest food well. It improves your health. And the fourth one is the samadhi or the stillness that you gain from walking meditation lasts longer and stable. And it prepares you, the fifth one, actually that's the fifth one, fourth one, was it prepares you, meditator, for sitting meditation. That is why in all the program meditation retreats, you will see 1 hour sitting, then there is half an hour walking meditation. A lot of people don't do it. And that's the unfortunate part. And it was, I will give you a nice thing that happened. And we were, as I said, we were staying at Jhana Grove 9 days, August, 9 days September this month. So we met these, as I told you, there are five young men from Europe, all Western, white, nice gentlemen, and they have taken leave and then come in doing the rain set. So one of them, I was at the, most of you know of the hall, kitchen hall, I was trying to make a cup of tea. He came and smiled, very nice man. And then he said, how are you? I said, fine. And how is meditation? I said, good, bad, who knows? That's the name of Ajahn Brahm's book. So take it as it comes, good, bad, who knows? Don't worry, be happy. Then he said, that's great, but I am having difficulties. He said, nothing is working for me. He has taken 3 months leave, you can imagine. And then I said, what's happening? He said, I can't calm my mind. All these thoughts are coming. And I told him, he's there. A couple of days ago I told him, there's a thing like this, can I quote you? He said, by all means. I said, I won't tell the name, but he's from Ajahn Brahmali's town. And he said he became a Buddhist after listening to Ajahn Brahmali's talk in, Ajahn Brahmali's talk in Norway. And I said, have you known walking meditation? He said, no. Do you want to know about it? He said, yes. This is the second person I have told walking meditation. Not taught. Only if someone asks, I tell them. Don't go back talking about it. Then I told him. And I told him how to do it, which I will do now. And then he said, that's great, I'll give it a go. And then we went away, came back 4 or 5 days ago, this month. He came to me and said, Ananda, I really got greatly benefited. He said, I now do 30 minutes before and after every sit. And this is the word he used. He said, I was at the lowest point of my meditation when I spoke to you. I was stunned, he said. And then he said, walking meditation does it for me. It get rid of all my problems. He said, I'm back. These are his very words, I'm back. And that it is walking meditation. So because I gave, and I, 3 days ago, I forgot, I brought this book to, I saw this book actually in a bookshop in Sri Lanka, Buddhist bookshop. This type of books are very rare. I would say this is written by jointly by Ajahn Brahm.
We have that here.
Oh, you have here?
Mm.
Oh, that's great.
I got it in the present
army. Ah, great. That's great. I was going to leave this book here. I bought about 5 copies and gave to about 3 or 4 friends, but I'm happy to leave this here for anyone to, for the library, and Amadeva Library. And Ajahn Jnanadhammo, those who know Ajahn Jnanadhammo, he was the second in command to Ajahn Brahm at Bodhinyana.
Yeah.
He is now the abbot at a big monastery in. He's again Australian from Adelaide. And they have written. So I gave him this book. I collected it today. So you know the 5 benefits of walking meditation. Main thing is how to do it. I'll just give it a little demonstration. And one thing. I'll also tell what Ajahn Brahm says what not to do, but I still feel how people do it. It's the wrong way, but nothing all wrong way, all right way, but better way. And Jhana Grove, those who have done walking meditation at Jhana Grove,
yeah.
That's great. So that stretches 12 steps. I measured it yesterday because I'm coming here. It's exactly 12 steps at Jhana Grove. And so you choose a path, and in any house, we have our former house, we found 3 paths. You know, sometimes it is not straight, but you can find inside or outside. It can be anything, 12 to 18 feet, steps. No hard and fast rule. And then you start from one end, walk to the other end, and come back to the same thing. And try to time it. And try to keep your mind on, I will let you know what the mindfulness, where you will establish mindfulness. This is where I have listened to some advice on walking meditation. Fortunately, I got this from a monk, that's a Sri Lankan monk who conducted the English medium retreat at Jhana Grove. First time I came across that monk as well. He gave this advice. We have to establish the mindfulness. That is where the problem is. So he said, when you walk, and Ajahn Brahm also says, Ajahn Brahm says, on the feet. But where on the feet? When you lift the foot, unfortunately you can't see all of you. When you lift the foot, you could see a gap between your heel and the floor.
Yeah.
Every time you walk, you lift the foot, that gap is there. Establish your mindfulness on that. The gap. That's why we say, you know, when you are a little bit advanced in your meditation, monks will say, look for the gap between the in-breath and out-breath. Don't worry about it. And in-breath and out-breath. Now this is the gap. Gap. Some may see the gap between the toes and the floor or the ground. Either way, whatever that works for you. And then you start from one end. There are two ways to this is not to get distracted so that you don't raise your hands or like that, but you keep your hands steady either at the back. This is what I am used to. My hands are always like that. Probably last 10 years, it automatically goes.
Can I just say something?
Yes, please.
In that book it says you must put your hands at the front.
At the front.
Not at the back.
Not at the back. Now, you're
See,
going, yep,
because
yep.
It's like going for a walk.
That's true.
Said.
That's true. I was going to thank you for that.
No,
and it
right.
says that or this in front, yeah. whichever you used to. There's another little book that has been written by a monk considered to be an arahant, past away. And arahant is the one who has completed the job. And he says, either way. And I have seen a lot of monks. Have you ever seen Ajahn Brahm walking like this? But he will be holding his robe like this and walking like this.
From
all his old jokes. He's in retreat now, 2 weeks. Visit Bodhinyana. It's a sublime place when Ajahn Brahm goes into seclusion. Look at this. Marvelous. He's a great monk. He's one of the three people I consider to be on this earth. One of the three. First one I consider everyone knows him as an arahant, Ajahn Ganha in Thailand. He's the one who massaged the belly of serpentine Jaradale Mayer. Do you remember that story from Madan Brahm? I went and met him. Both of us went, me and my wife. Met him, my goodness. Him, Bhante Gunaratan in America. Ajahn Brahm. We have, people don't know, that's a gold mine in Sopan time. But people still go and look for gold in coal mines. We can find gold in coal mines. So gold is there in Sopan time. So either way. So you walk, start from here, and just do a quick body scan from top of the bottom to the bottom of the, top of the head to the bottom of the feet. Very quick, half a second, and then you walk. But establish your mindfulness between the heel and the floor, the gap. And have your gaze about 2 body lengths. You are not looking down, you are not looking to sides, but your gaze is about 2 body lengths. No hard and fast rule, whichever that is convenient, comfortable to you. Yes, Bob, please.
Fernand, you're saying you do walking meditation with your eyes open?
Eyes open. Because if you close your eyes, you don't know something you walk across the path. You've got to have your eyes open.
Okay.
Otherwise, safety hazard.
Mm.
Yes. And Buddha has never said, some monks I know, they say, okay, I've been to a retreat.
Yeah.
And if necessary, close your eyes. If it is, if you cannot. But you have to have your eyes wide open. So that is why the samadhi or the stillness that comes through the walking meditation is more stronger. Because other sensual stimulus are coming, but you are disregarding them. It won't happen immediately, I tell you. I practiced for quite some time until I got to something. I'm saying, I have a long way to go. So it will take some time, but sometimes we too practice half an hour a day. That can help you enormously, because it has helped me. My friend from Norway said so, just 3-4 days ago. And so just walk and look at the Look, keep your gaze. And mindfully turn back. You know you are turning. And then quarter of a second, 2 seconds, quick body scan, then walk. Mindfully turn back. And then walk. Don't worry if thoughts come. You can't help because they are coming, just now coming. So it is a disturbance. That is why your samadhi, or the samadhi is the Pali word for stillness. Previously it was called concentration, but Ajahn Brahm has banned that word. Stillness is more stronger because you are trying to calm your mind despite the fact that there are the disturbances. So therefore it becomes a more stable stillness. We're running out of time. So I intend to give some other clues, but let's see. Ajahn Brahm has this, I don't know if this is a joke or anything that really happened. I have seen time and time again people walk like this. Look down. All the monks say don't do that. Ajahn Brahm has a word for this. What is it?
Penguin
walk. Zombie meditation.
Zombies.
Zombies?
Is that the speed you normally walk, what you did before? That's
yeah.
The speed you normally walk.
That's the speed, your normal speed.
Because we've seen it really, really slow.
Yes.
Mm.
It is, because it wouldn't prepare you for long journeys then. That's one of the benefits that Buddha says. One of the benefits that Buddha says. So adopt your normal speed. Use your normal speed. And then Ajahn Brahm says, would you mind staying 2-3 minutes? I want to share this joke. It's not a joke, it's something actually has happened. Ajahn Brahm says, one day a family has come to offer the dana. They wanted to go to the Jan Grove just to see. And then Ajahn Brahm said, there is a retreat, not a Buddhist society retreat, but outside groups hire the center, as you know, Mahayanas, Vipassana centers and all that. So they came back and there was a child about 10 years old. He has gone to Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn, Ajahn, there's a problem at Jan Grove. What is it? It's a retreat. Ajahn told them there is a retreat, so don't disturb. They just went in there. At that time they were doing their walking meditation. Ajahn, Ajahn, what's wrong? Ajahn, zombies have taken over your center. What do you mean zombies? This child has showed him how they walk. Don't do it. It won't bring you the benefits. No wonder that you are unsuccessful. And so Ajahn Brahm always says, and Ajahn Kemuvaro once showed this in, you may have been there last year's 5-day retreat, he gave a demonstration of the walking meditation.
Not last year.
No. So he walks very fast, that is. And also recently, and you can do it after, you know, few weeks practice. If the walking path, me and my wife walks along the river in Riverton, and nice walking paths, and it's free, no disturbances. Number of times if there are no other people coming on the path, I put it. One day I did it, also I can share, this is not, you know, it doesn't work, it doesn't happen all the time. We know everything is impermanent, you cannot replicate something that happened. Meditation, you cannot replicate, you may have a fantastic meditation today, tomorrow you don't know what will happen. So that day I established my mindfulness on the feet and I came back home and said, I came to the point where I had to turn off the walking path. I could have gone for another 2 hours. We used to walk for a long time on long walks, both of us used to go, but getting old, so reduced. But that day, I could have gone for another souvenir. So, if it works, it's fantastic. And it will. Be positive, have a confident mind, and be kind. That's it. And apart from that, nothing else. But we can take any questions rising out of this talk or anything that is burning, please.
Just with the walking one, so you can just do it walking forward, or do you always have to stop and turn, stop and
turn? To make it meditation, what it gives is, because if you are a good experienced person, you could do long walking meditation, but then your mindfulness will get disturbed.
Yeah.
Because the point is, you know this path, actually you select a path where there isn't very much disturbance.
Okay.
But if you go for a long walk and practice meditation, there will be disturbances coming.
Okay, so try to choose somewhere no disturbance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is why, and also if it is too long, as a rule of guide, rule of thumb, what it says is, from the beginning to the end, if you can do it without much thoughts coming, then that's a sort of yardstick to measure your success.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because it is not too long,
yeah,
and you could do it. If it is long, by the time you come, start from here, go for 25 meters, some thought may have come.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Yes, please.
You need to be in like automatic pilot, do it.
Exactly. You, as time goes on, you'll be walking and your mindfulness will be here,
yeah,
at the bottom. But to begin with, you may have to, what shall I say, deliberately establish the mindfulness. You have to be aware, because sometimes you will lose that contact with the gap. But as you become experienced and connected with the way of walking, and your mindfulness become better, and then it is on autopilot, just like the sitting meditation. Well, it's good for the body. It improves your health. It improves your digestion. It prepares for you for long walks. And it's a precursor for sitting meditation. And the samadhi that you gain from this meditation is more solid. Samadhi is the stillness.
How about keeping a mantra?
Yes, you could do that. And some say, have a mantra. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Only thing is, then your attention will not be on walking. Your attention will be on the mantra, in the mantra. That's good for the sitting meditation. Good for the sitting meditation if your mind is restless, monkey mind, as they say, as the Buddha said. Buddha said, our mind is like monkey mind. Yeah. And so, in that case, yes. But better to keep it on the feet. Advisable. But to begin with, it's okay. Some people I know, in fact, long-term Buddhist, experienced meditator, he said, I think of everything is impermanent when I walk. If it works for him, that's great. So that's the walking meditation. Any other questions? No? And I think it's 8:35. Thank you for everyone. Only one more.
Yeah, you'll be back.